Hello, everyone, and welcome to Our Stories from the production studios at Community Radio Station KHMB 100.9 FM and 1710 AM. This podcast is a collection of news stories from CoastSideNews.com, publishers of the Half Moon Bay Review and the Pacifica Tribune. This podcast is a collaboration between the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement, Coastside News, and KHMB Radio. I'm David Gorn. Thanks for joining us on Our Stories. This is podcast number 5 for us. Saying it's the 5th episode, well, it sounds a little like being the parent of a newborn, and right now I'm still counting in weeks. Anyway, what we're trying to do here on Our Stories is to tell the stories of the coastside, which can sometimes be surprisingly complex, to generally keep you up to speed on what's happening here, and to have a little fun along the way. So the first place we're taking you today is out to the harbor. Not to talk about fishing, not to talk about crabbing or even harbor dredging, but instead to take a look at the running of the harbor itself. And on the coast side, that has historically been an up-and-down proposition. There's been a lot of turmoil over the years. A decade ago, it got so bad, a grand jury recommended disbanding the harbor district. But we've seen that dysfunction turn around in the past 10 years to the point where the harbor district has now actually gotten independent praise for how it's run. Now the Harbor District is making news in a different way, in an unusual way. As reporter Ashton Hackey is about to explain to me, Ashton is reporter for CoastSideNews.com. Ashton, welcome.
Happy to be here.
So, hey, before we start, I wanted to say I really like that story you did in our last podcast about the legal fight over the millions of dollars in sewer repairs and who is or isn't going to pay for it. I remember you pushed me to do that story, and I resisted because really, like, how boring is a story about sewers, right? But I ended up loving it because I learned something about something I knew pretty much nothing about.
Thank you. If you like that one, you love this one.
Ah, you know, I did have that thought when you first talked to me about harbor supervision.
Well, what I found is anytime we talk about something at the agency level, that stakes get higher. The money's bigger.
So I know this is in the weeds a little, but can we start with how much money we're talking about here? I mean, to me, Harbor District sounds like kind of a minor player on the coastside.
Yeah, the Harbor District's 2025 budget is about $12.5 million. That money comes from property taxes, boat slip fees, and some land leases. Revenue is expected to exceed expenses this year by about $3
million. So over $12 million to run it. Okay. That's a sizable agency, and the only thing I really know about it is that there's been a lot of turmoil in its past.
Concerns have been raised for decades now. Official reviews and grand jury reports have criticized the Harbor District's lack of financial transparency and poor management practices. There have been multiple recommendations to disband the agency altogether, even recently. There have been claims of corruption, financial misconduct, and at least one claim of sexual harassment. At one point even, two board members reportedly got into a physical altercation.
But that's all in the past, right? You told me. It's all better now.
There's a definite shift in how the Harbor District is seen now. It earned multiple awards for the Government Finance Officers Association for transparent budget reporting over the past 5 years. And the big one is, for the first time in recent memory, the Harbor District actually got a positive rating from LAFCO.
Oh, I know LAFCO. That's the Local Agency Formation Commission.
Yes, exactly. The commission that does a big review of the Harbor District every 10 years. So in their most recent 2024 report, they noted that the Harbor District has been much more financially transparent and applauded district management for improving operations.
Well, Ashton, that's great. I mean, that means they're better. The harbor's better now. But, you know, that's that's kind of boring. I mean, all those scandals, that makes it a lot better story. But now, I mean, like, okay, where's the controversy?
I'm getting to that. You have to understand, for so many years now, the county has been making noise about taking over the Harbor District, in part because of those scandals.
So now they can't do that anymore.
Here's the thing. Now the Harbor District is going the other way. It's full of the idea to take over the other county agencies.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
The Harbor recently said it wants to take over running the airports.
Half Moon Bay Airport, you mean?
Well, yes, Half Moon Bay Airport and also the small airport over in San Carlos.
Oh, I know that airport because my kid really likes the aviation museum they have there. Well, honestly, he likes the aviation museum store is what he likes. But yeah, that's not a small airport.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a significant airport, but it's not SFO. So everyone just calls it a small airport.
So the Harbor District would run both airports.
But that's not all. They also want to take over the marina at Coyote Point near Burlingame. that would essentially transform the district into a San Mateo County Port Authority, which would manage ports, harbors, airports, and marinas that belong to the county.
Wow, those are big plans. So the Harbor District would like to run Half Moon Bay Airport and San Carlos Airport and the Coyote Point Marina. Why?
In its response to concerns that the district duplicates services, even the most recent LAFCO report, that issue was raised again. Disbanding the Harbor District might create efficiencies by cutting out duplication of services.
But I'm guessing the Harbor District doesn't like that whole disbanding idea.
No, not at all. So the Harbor said, hey, county, if you want to combine our services with Coyote Point Marina and two small airports, that's fine. The Harbor said, sure, we could do all that too.
We'll just run them all.
Exactly.
So what do the two airports in the marina that are currently there have to say about all that?
Not exactly receptive. County Airport Manager Gretchen Kelly, for one, came out and said the county does not support the Harbor District taking over the airports.
Well, I guess it doesn't hurt to just float it out there, if you know what I mean. So if the airports and the marina don't want to be taken over, what's the next step here?
The most likely scenario of the three seems to be acquiring the Coyote Point Marina. Harbor District General Manager James Pruitt said he thinks the possibility is realistic. To do any of that, the Harbor District or another agency would need to submit a formal request to initiate what's called a proposal of governance survey.
Okay, so that's something the Harbor District could do itself. So it doesn't necessarily need buy-in from the marina or the airports, even the county, is that right?
They could initiate it themselves, sure. But to get that kind of change of governance improved, they would definitely need buy-in from county in a big way.
It does sound kind of good, though, doesn't it? The Coastside Port Authority. Anyway, thank you, Ashton Hackey. I learned quite a bit just now. That's cool. But which brings us to story number two. There has been a small breakthrough for farm worker housing on the coastside. San Mateo County supervisors just passed a resolution to allocate $2 million for the Farm Labor Housing Loan Program. Its primary function is to help bring farm worker housing up to code, which would ensure that existing farm worker housing can remain just that, rather than being shut down because of code violations. So with me is Sebastian Mino-Buccelli, reporter for CoastsideNews.com. Sebastian, hi. Can you tell me if I have that right? This $2 million is mostly designed to not lose farm worker housing?
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. And yes, this loan is just to keep the residential units that we have and rehabilitate it so it's not up for code violations anymore.
So I know this all started 2 years ago with the mushroom farm killings. It seems like every farm worker housing improvement on the coastside has been related to that. Can you tell me how that crime from 2 years ago has led to housing improvements on farms now?
So let's go back to when those mushroom farm shootings happened. In the aftermath, the Board of Supervisors created a task force, and their job was to go through every agriculture operation that had farm labor housing and check just to see if each farm labor housing unit met the minimum standard. And they had spent, a year or two in those investigations, and the report came back, and they found that only a third of those units inspected needed corrective work to meet the minimum housing standard.
But so, just to back up, so because of the shootings and then all the housing conditions that came to light after those shootings, the county ended up doing more inspections and found quite a few subpar living conditions at farm-based housing. So at these sites, are we talking about the horrible conditions everyone saw on TV reports 2 years ago? What type of violations are we talking about here?
Yeah, no, it wasn't that extreme. Some of these violations were, simple, that some units, they needed a smoke detector, or that there was unsafe drinking water levels, and maybe they just needed to change the filter or
change the pipes, right?
Yeah, or even add a window to the unit so there's another method of escape if there's a fire.
Okay, so farm owners get these loans. I don't think they need a loan for smoke detectors, but for replacing pipes or windows or those are like more substantial repairs.
Yeah, or even, adding a monitoring system so they can detect if water levels are unsafe, or in some cases, some units needed a different type of septic tank.
Okay, so I have to say, sorry, but there's a small irony here because I love ironies, but the county wanted to provide more housing for farm workers, and the mushroom farm killings that brought that need to light. But the first thing that prompted was more county inspections and actually the closure of some farm worker housing. And this is sort of a variation on that. Do I have that right? It's not so much to build new farm worker housing as much as it is to save existing farm worker housing. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And this program that's being brought back, it's going to go to two phases. The first phase is repairing and renovating existing units. There's some units that are also illegal, and they're going to have to go through the process to become legalized. And if there's any remaining money after that, that will go to building new units.
Because I know farm owners have been clamoring for help, loan money, to build some new units for their workers. But I know that's a much more expensive proposition, obviously.
And that's why when the Department of Housing staff, like Raymond Hodges, director of the department, came to the Board of Supervisors, he initially gave them three options, two of which that it's not going to be a forgivable loan, so farm operators are going to have to pay it back in 30 years, whether it's like a monthly basis or it balloons at the end. This is all zero interest. And the third option is a forgivable loan, and that was similar to the previous iterations of this program. So there's a lot of incentive.
So this is sort of like the first step. This is to fix all the houses, bring them all up to code, keep all the farm worker housing, and then if there's some money left over to fund new housing, but then after that, there will be a next step of needing to fund housing expansion at some point, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So take me through it. How does the program work and who gets this money?
Farm operators can receive up to $100,000 per unit to cover expenses for renovations. Supervisor Noelia Corzo also said, let's add some sort of audit so we can be sure that the money is being put to good use. It's going to be a zero interest. Farm operators can pay a monthly basis. And on top of that, the Department of Housing offered a rental subsidy. And I can see you're a little interested in that, and I'll walk you through that too. The part of the rental subsidy is that if the farm operators keep the rents low, a lot of that money will go to credit towards the loan. So in effect, farm operators can pay down their loan much faster than the 30 years that's anticipated.
So they charge a certain amount of rent. If they lower the rent, any money they use for that can go toward the loan, to paying off the loan. So in theory, they could give farm workers a real deal if they wanted, if they chose to.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So I guess last thing, I just wanted to point out Half Moon Bay and the Coastside have been working on farm worker housing long before the mushroom farm killings 2 years ago. So there's Moon Ridge Housing, for instance, in addition to the new housing out at Stone Pine Cove and the approval of housing at 555 Kelly. People look at all that and they wonder about housing for other low-income groups, you know, like service workers, which is kind of a specious argument, but still, can you just help me understand how big the need is for farm worker housing?
Some of the farm operations are hidden away. You don't really get to see the crisis up hand unless you're at the farm itself. And you can see that units may be crowded. So there is a real demand for supplying housing for the farm workers so they can continue to help sustain the agriculture economy that the Coastside depends on.
Thank you, Sebastian Minio-Bocelli. And thanks for all your work covering farming and farm worker issues.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's a wrap for podcast number 5. I want to thank a few people for their help with this podcast. Big thanks to Ashton Hackey and Sebastian Minio-Bocelli for their hard work tracking down and reporting those CoastsideNews.com stories. And thanks to editors Peter Tukofsky and Emma Spaeth. Thanks also to KHMB Radio, station manager Jim Henderson, and engineer Jay Michaels. Thanks to Peter Finch and the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement for supporting us. I'm David Gorn. And thanks a ton for listening. We're excited to do this again in 2 weeks, Wednesday at 6 p.m. on KHMB Radio and through Spotify and other apps. Adios.